Blog Talk Radio.
The great and liberating things for me, and I think why this thing came to fruition, I made a big deal that this stayed quiet, you know, and you know, first of all, you know, what I was doing, I was, part of the rumors are things fly out of that building, and so I wanted to see, could I trust this building?
None is by law, written, go, we go, go. None is by law, written, go, we go, go. None is by law, written, go, we go, go. None is by law, written, go, we go, go. My feet are real low, go blooded to the death. Tailgate, got a little powder on my breath. Empire Road, still banging green light. My 49, tall cans, double shots. Middle finger up, motherfucker, Seahawks. Red zone banging, got drama, let it pop. Killer California, Houston, Texas. This lang gang hopping out of Lexus. Niggas be frontin', not die hard. Popping out the mouth, E.R. Kaiser. Santana family rapping in the shy. Me and Arvello eating Giordano pie. Ray Red hollering, not as by law.
My tailgate party is a red and gold thing. Bang, bang, nine a gang. Yeah, ho, I'm faithful. That means if you lose, bitch, I still be grateful. You's a bandwagon rider. Always been a nine. Kings of the Bay, boy, call us five. Go back to Steve Young, Jerry White. Jerry Joe Montana riding like red and white. Mike represent for that black and brown power. We games ain't ready to kick off in an hour. Rolling up sour, my team number one. Nine is by law, the red and gold, we go dumb.
Nine is by law, red and gold, we go dumb.
My interactions with Jed York is he's a guy who all he wants to do is win. He's tired of strife and contention in the building. He wants harmony. We can't beat around the bush. We got to get right to, do I want to work for these people? To me, that's an awesome deal. And I understand, I think just from being around it, from being a football fan, from being up there and standing, playing for Bill, from being around Ronnie and feeling his presence, to Tina Turner and Bill Ringler on that staff, I just get, what dawned upon me. This isn't just a normal franchise. This is one of the iconic franchises in football. And the opportunity to restore that to its glory and to work really hard to do that, that just got me. And so...
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Nine of Faithful. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. Hope everyone had a blessed week today. And Adam, if he decides to call in, he might be a little under the weather, a little too depressed. But we'll be going over the Niners Chiefs toss, peak of the devil. Hey, Adam, it was funny. I was just going through the intro right now, and I said you were feeling a little depressed. And, didn't know if you were going to call in, and lo and behold, I popped your number.
Well, are we on the live right now?
Yeah. I was just going to say, so give me 2 seconds. So like I was saying, me and Adam are going to go ahead and go over your calls. The number to call in is 646-668-8467. And the number to text in the show is 408-785-3015. But before we get started today, go ahead and go to patreon.com/Niner Faithful Radio and check out the awesome different tiers and rewards we have for different amounts that you donate to the show. That site again is Niner Faithful Radio, or patreon.com/Niner Faithful Radio. Go to seatgiant.com. And use the promo code Niner Faithful Radio, all one word, to save and also contribute to the show. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it for today as far as the intro is concerned. So I figured I like to start the show off positive. So me and Adam kind of had a little pre-show meeting and decided we're going to go ahead and start with this date in Niner history, which to me is a pretty cool date. 9/24/2000 was the day that T.O. stood on the star at the 50-yard line at what was then Texas Stadium. What's your recall of that game, Adam?
What I recall, to be completely honest with you, I was, you know, obviously it was kind of like when my fandom originally kind of first started, so I just kind of started pulling up some highlights right now of it, and I remember you kind of told me the backstory of it, which I think a lot of 49ers people would love to hear. You mind actually going over the particular reason why he even did it, which a lot of people don't know about?
Yeah, okay, so I got you, but this is actually something that while doing a little bit of research, I found this out, pulling this up on a, I want to say NFL Films highlight of it, but if you go to YouTube, you'll pretty much find it. But apparently, so this comes from T.O. and what looked like our old receivers coach. His name, something Stewart. His name is I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. But apparently the Niners were going through warm-ups a day or two before the game. And there was an old saying back in the day that why did Texas Stadium have a hole in the roof? And all Cry Girls fans used to say, because God likes to watch his, so God can watch his favorite football team. Well, T.O., I don't know if this question was asked to him or he asked the question or whatnot, but was said that back in the day, this was God's football team and you know, so on and so forth. And so he was told to go, if you score tomorrow, you know, or score on Sunday, go to the 50-yard line and give glory to God. Well, it just so happened to be that, you know, 50-yard line is where the star is and, you know, all that. And that's why if you look at the highlight, T.O. really is looking up at the sky like, you know, like he's praying or giving glory to God. And so, obviously, that's not how the Cry Girls took it. That's not how I took it. I remember I missed the second one because somebody in the group home was in trouble and kept on sneaking in to the TV room, so they made us turn off the game. But I was able to catch the first one. I just thought he was, you know, being T.O., and I think that for maybe our listeners that are a little too young to remember T.O. like I remember him, standing on the 50-yard line at Texas Stadium didn't seem something that was out of character for him. I mean, T.O., you're talking about the man who grabbed pom-poms from cheerleaders, pulled a sock, Sharpie out of his sock, which consequently that was the day the Giants clinched, won the NL pennant in 2002. But anyway, so as we all, or I shouldn't say as we all know, but the game goes on. Emmitt Smith scores a touchdown, and if I'm not mistaken, it's the very next drive. The Emmitt Smith scores a touchdown, runs to the 50-yard line, slams the ball, you know, on the 50-yard line and stares T.O. kind of like, this is my house.
type of moment.
Right.
Well, then, so apparently it gets even deeper. T.O., of course, as we all know, the second one came with 4:06 left in the fourth quarter. With the score of 40-17, well, it made the score 40-17. But the play before the touchdown, if you go back, and NFL Films does a really good job of showing this highlight, T.O. takes George Teague, who was the player that, as we know, tackled him at the 50-yard line when he did it the second time. T.O. drives him out the end zone and plants him on his ass the play before. And if you watch, George Teague, you know, starts to try to come over and push T.O., and they're separated and everything like that. Well, the next play is when T.O. did it a second time, ran back, and didn't get a chance to celebrate or really do anything. George Teague comes and cracks him. You know, bedlam ensues, and, you know. Now, this is the interesting part is Jeff Garcia and T.O.'s relationship was very – you know, it had turmoil, as it's very well known. If you watch this NFL Films highlight, I'll go ahead and try to share it to the Niner Faithful Radio, Twitter, and Facebook today, and maybe Instagram if I can. One of the first players to come over and hug T.O. and talk to him is Jeff Garcia. And I thought that was very, very interesting. As we all know, T.O. is suspended for the following week by Steve Mariucci, and that essentially led to what the damaged relationship that led to T.O. being released. What was it, 2003, 2004?
Right, somewhere around there.
So you might have been a little too young to really have the recall that I did of it, but. Apparently, also, this is a little, I wrote this down in my notes, JJ, he told JJ Stokes, hey, meet me at the same spot. So the second time was very planned and was very, but I thought that would be a good way to start off the show this week with a little bit of a positive, kind of cool little Dayton Niner history. And, you know, I know that for people who are around my age and older, that's kind of a little cool. This Dayton Niner history, kind of a flashback. Now, I think that we've kind of avoided the elephant in the room long enough. I'm pretty sure everybody knows. It has officially been confirmed by the Niners that Jimmy G. Cool has tore his ACL and is done for the season. We both just let out a big ass sigh right now, bro.
Should we bust out a beer bottle and shotgun really fast?
Yeah, exactly, right? You don't. I was a quarter ice cream in. I know. I noticed that you and Nick both liked the my reply to his tweet when he said he's going to set a record for weight gain in a 24-hour period.
Yeah.
And I already told him, hey, bro, I'm a quarter ice cream in. I mean, that's. Look, I've packed on a few LBs over the last year, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Niner losses aren't a big reason why. I go straight for the ice cream, straight for the but the only silver lining that is in this is it's not a ACL and MCL. If the difference being from what I've been able to gather and hearing from different people on KNBR and whatnot. ACL is about a 9-month process, which would put him around fully, quote unquote, fully recovered around June, July-ish. So pretty close to, he should be ready to go by training camp. An ACL, MCL is about a year and a half to 2 years. So that we're looking at him, if it was an ACL, MCL, we were looking at
really
him not stepping onto the field until 2020.
Well, Wentz came back yesterday for his first game back, and he was at pretty much 9 months, but I think he tore his MCL as well, if I'm not mistaken. And
he was
at the 9-month mark.
I can't remember if it was ACL or MCL, but I know that he was injured week 14, and that, I mean, that's neither here nor there. He has an ACL. So I think that regardless of recovery time, it's less of a serious surgery. I mean, ACL surgery is still
it's
serious.
It's more of a clean tear.
But if you – exactly. If you – from what's been described to me just throughout the years of watching football and everything is that when you tear your ACL and MCL, it's more of a reconstructive.
Right.
You know, it's more of a you're reconstructing your knee. Versus
it's more
the
that
ACL
goes into
tear.
It with the rehab process and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Now – Larry Kruger yesterday kind of had a point, or I'm sorry, today kind of had a point on his radio show with Gary Radnich that if you well, let's take a long-term team view is that over the course of 3 weeks. You could say that the Niners were a year away. Now, I personally wouldn't want to say that. We've gone over, you know, our thoughts of the season and everything. But
right.
I'm a firm believer of your quarterback can cover up a lot of glaring
deficiencies. Sure.
Deficiencies, you know, a lot of deficiencies in your roster.
Sure.
And just like a bad quarterback can exacerbate those deficiencies in the roster. So, it is, you know, we'll have our 24 hours. The Empire will have our 24 hours. I mean, this is seriously a serious blow. I haven't I was telling you, Adam, earlier that back in 97, I remember we got our asses handed to us by Tampa Bay. It was the first game of the year in Tampa Bay, and Jerry had blown out his knee, and we lost Steve to concussion. And I know Steve came back, I think, like a week or two later. But Jerry didn't come back. He was actually thought – and that's back before when ACLs were still, you know, like those are lightweight, you know, career-threatening injuries. You know, it wasn't like today where people are like, oh, he just told you, you know, those were real serious big deals back in.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably started to turn the table where medical advances were starting to get to that point, but it was still like not a sure thing. He ends up coming back against the Broncos on Monday night, gets hurt. And so, you know, not since then have I really felt this devastated over an injury. I mean, to one particular player.
I've never – I mean – sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just simply going to say, like, I'm – everybody knows me as a old-time, you know, one of the most positive type of people, you know, kind of to have around. I'm, you know, pride of myself, and I joke around about it as far as being optimist prime, but literally, like, it just – obviously, we're all just desperate to – you know, we all knew this season was big for us, and we had a chance to possibly reach the playoffs, and – you know, I've said it before, you know, once you're in, you kind of never know once you do have a quarterback. And when you do have a quarterback, I should say. And, you know, just kind of, you know, just like you said, it's just pretty devastating. I haven't felt like depression like this legitimately. I know it's going to go away, but I haven't literally, this is like one of the worst feelings I can literally recall in a long, long, long time. Probably just being like heartbroken over some type of stupid girl situation or something along those lines. It's kind of like to that level.
Exactly. No, I mean, it was, and I want to let this be known. I said this on either my Facebook or Twitter, or Instagram video this morning, but this is the thing that I feel frustrated the most about is obviously Jimmy G Cool needs to step out of bounds there and everything like that. And,
do you fully feel that way? Like,
you're
kind of putting blame on him some?
No. See, a lot of people are saying that I'm not mad at Jimmy G Cool. I'm not mad that, and this is, I think a lot of things you know, have to be taken in consideration is that, you know, Jimmy G Cool, the NFL offseason so long. Okay, it's horrible. We hate it. You know, whatever.
That's
all
part
this
of the depression,
year,
you know.
All the exactly the depression. I mean, like I literally remember one of the first things when I started, you know, getting over the initial shock, and obviously this happened. You know, there was still some time left in the game. Obviously, this happened. You know, I still had to watch a game and, you know, do reporting and things like that. Was that I couldn't believe it was week three because I had spent all this time, you know, building up this hype and trying to build up to these moments, you know, of actually, you know, seeing my team play and everything. And it came crashing down.
Right.
I think every, you know, we all got that. And
right.
I don't blame him because it's okay. So with to take a cross sport reference, with the Sharks getting Erik Karlsson, who for those who don't know, is basically one of the best defensemen, offensive defensemen in the AHL, and the Sharks made a trade for him. With the word going around Sharks territory a lot is game changing player. And, you know, the type of player that says, hey, when this player is on the ice or in football's case on the field, they change the game. And I think it's slowly starting to become clear over the course of the first 3 weeks. Now, still small sample size, is that our biggest game changing player on offense is Jimmy G. Cool. As he goes, the offense goes. And what you say, what was he trying to do there? He was trying to fight for extra yards. He's trying to,
right.
He's being a competitor. He's being the leader of a team. And you know what? He's trying to be Superman. He's trying to carry it. Because I really feel that the team, this is partly Garoppolo, partly Shanahan, feels like they're never out of a game. And I know I felt like I remember before that drive, as we slowly started, you know, working our way down the field, I remember thinking to myself, he's going to bring us back. Like this
right.
is where legends are made. Like he's really like, we're really going to win this game. Like,
or if not, it was just going to go down the wire type of deal.
Or yeah. Or at least, hey, now as everything turned out, it'd have been difficult to win that game. That last drive just simply took too much time. Kansas City
right.
just let us get all the underneath stuff and said, hey, we'll let you have a 17-play drive that takes 8 minutes. You know, okay, fine, we're cool with that. You know, because you still got to – so, but – and I think that was him trying to will his team to a victory like good quarterbacks do. So
I mean, he didn't do anything crazy. It's not like, you know, he freaking cut back in and he got leveled by three guys. And it's like, Jimmy, you got to step out there, bud. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't do
yeah.
a crazy ass type of move that, like, warranted, like, it, I mean, he just kind of reminded me a little of Jerick McKinnon. Like, you know, he makes, like, a little
yeah.
cut, nothing wild, and it just kind of gives. Didn't even look serious at all. Initially, I thought it was his shoulder. You know, I thought he got some type of shoulder type of stinger type of deal. You know, if I'm taking on that hit, I literally didn't even
know
it was his knee.
What I've been able to gather around for the different various Niners that were interviewed is they thought it was a concussion, like a
right.
he got a concussion
yeah.
issue or something, or you know something. Nobody thought knee. Now we all know that Matt Breida hyperextended his knee. Now what they said on the KGO broadcast is that Tim Ryan, who does the color commentary for the Niners, talked to the head groundkeeper, and they said that they had, I believe, a Taylor Swift or somebody concert at Arrowhead, and that the sod was new. And if you notice, I want to say at least once, maybe twice, Agent Colbert had footing issues. I know a couple times Ruben Foster had footing issues.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is I'd be curious to know if that was the same area that Jimmy got hurt in, the same area that these players were having these issues. And, you know, maybe that's a turf issue, but it's a freak accident. And
exactly.
So going forward, you know, we have our 24 hours to grieve and everything like that. This is where I feel that the empire is getting divided. You have those people who are, you know, the season's done, it's horrible, it's over, you know, wake me up in April, you know, type of situation. Then you have the people like, hey, you know, let's rock with CJ, see what we got. You and me had our little opinions. I'll let you give your opinion in a second. But I'm more of a firm believer that in Bill Walsh's saying of champions act like champions before they're champions. And I always believe in installing a winning culture. You know, I always feel that every time you step on the football field, the goal is to win. But I'm not opposed into, like we discussed, trading Pierre Garçon. You brought that up. I'm not against that. Personally, I think he's a great receiver. I love his effort. You know, that block on Breeze touchdown.
Absolutely love him.
You know, great, but you know, yeah, I'll take a fifth. If you said the Raiders, I'll say maybe the Patriots, whatever team. I don't even know a team in need of receiver. Anybody, obviously, except outside of the division, obviously, comes calling up and says, hey, we'll give you a fifth rounder right now for Pierre Garçon. Pierre Garçon's on the next plane out of SJC. To whatever city that makes that offer, that offers me a fifth-round pick for Pierre Garçon. I'm bringing up Richie James. I'll put it to you this way. Not right away. I mean, the trading Pierre Garçon, I'm not so much
that
young player right away. I feel that you owe it to the fan base and organization to try to go forward – for a winning season, you know, a playoff, you know, that type of mindset until it's obvious that you can't. And to me, there's too much of a chance. There's too much of a way to win with CJ to just say that the season's in the dumps just because, like, we haven't even – now, we saw him preseason. We saw him last year. You know, that's true. And, you know, it did not look good. But
you were absolutely dying yesterday when you came in. To Kittle, that was
obviously
wrongfully called back.
Okay, I'm in the study room, so if we bring up that OP, we'll save the bringing up the OPI for a little bit of the game review. But, I'm going to end up screaming because that was the most absolute total bullshit call I've ever seen in my fucking life. I literally lost it. Like,
and when you're down, you know what I mean? It's not like we were the team winning, and it's like, let's go ahead and, you know, they can't get too high up. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, we were behind, you know, Kwon Williams got a bullshit PI that led to a touchdown earlier in the game. You know what I mean? That possibly changes things up a little bit.
And can we not – okay, can we take away the fact is that KC essentially plays like Seattle used to play, where they just grab you on every play because they know the ref's not going to throw the flag every time. I think that's pretty clear after watching yesterday's game. That's what I got away with. The offensive line.
I didn't focus too much on that, to be honest.
Yeah. They were clearly playing. I mean, the word that football people like to use is physical. You know, they're playing physical, but they're grabbing, they're holding, they're clutching, they're doing things essentially. They're playing the Richard Sherman way, which is
right. Just
basically, I'm going to play physical as hell, and I know they're not going to throw a flag on every play.
Exactly.
You know, that's just, they're just not going to do that. So
that's
my
what
whole
Lions
thing
did
is,
with us too.
Yeah, exactly what the Lions did to us. So my whole thing about this is, fine, you know, Kyle Juszczyk, my whole thing about it is I saw somebody who was fighting for the ball. And this is the thing that has to be – this is the thing to me is when the league goes back to the collective bargaining agreement and all that type of they need to change it where does it have an effect on the play? Because clearly that didn't have an effect on the play. I can understand if essentially if you're running like almost like a pick type of route, or maybe use check gets in the way of the defender trying to defend Kittle or it. But I don't feel that if Kyle Juszczyk didn't, you know, stop and jump up for the ball, I don't feel that that pass was still going to be complete.
Right. It's almost like a moot point.
It was still going to be a touchdown. It had absolutely no effect on the play.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing that got me the most mad, is that it got – and to me, it's just – and I'm wondering if it's a scheme issue. Because if you look back to the last year, we had, I want to say, a couple OPI type of calls. And so I don't know if this is something that the refs are specific. Because it's very clear that Kyle Shanahan likes to run, you know, routes that are meant to open, routes that are meant to clear out space and legal pick routes, essentially. So maybe
sure.
Is this something that the refs are, you know, really trying to look for? Because to throw in the towel and say that the year's over, when we haven't even watched a game with CJ, when we haven't even gotten to the what you and me and a lot of people are essentially calling the easy part of our schedule. You know, where you're starting to look at the schedule and you're starting to say, okay, hey, we should run off some games here. So to me, to throw in the towel, because there's a way, look, if we can run the ball, which by the way, Bria is still, he's tied, but he still, you know, leads the league in rushing and 8.6 average. So, I mean, you know, big ups to Breida. Morris did his thing. Kyle Shanahan clearly showed a commitment to the run yesterday. You know, they
sure.
were not going bombs away. And I essentially, that's what I think helped us get back in the game. So, if we can take the pressure off of CJ and can step up on defense, which is the number one question, which is the concern, which I can understand why people might doubt that. But if we can play just decent football on defense. I'm not saying that this is, you know, a 10-11, you know, record, you know, win season. But, I mean, can we sneak into a 7-9, 8-8 type of scenario? Maybe, you know, for example, Aaron Rodgers is clearly hampered from anybody that watched everybody that I know that watched the Packer game last year, kind of giving me a pre-scouting report for a blog I'm going to do for Nothing But Niners, a preview blog for the Packers game. I said the agent, Aaron Rodgers, is clearly hampered. Now, maybe that, adding the fact that we play a great defensive game and maybe C.J. Beathard just makes a couple plays when it's necessary, maybe we go into Green Bay and still a game. That's possible. You know, and so I think that if the move makes sense, then go ahead and do it. It makes sense to trade Pierre Garçon and call up Richie James. That makes sense to me. I think because I'll go ahead and get your opinion on this and right after this, but I don't see, besides Jimmy G. Cool, Matt Breida, and George Kittle potentially, you know, I don't think he's quite there yet, but do you see any game-changing players on offense as we stand right now?
I mean, we still got Marquise Goodwin, you know, Pettis obviously is in his first year. No worries. I mean, just to kind of touch up on it, the reason why I brought up possibly trading Pierre Garçon and, you know, to kind of counter, you know, hey, you never know. I mean, you can't take anything off the table right now. Like you said, we haven't even seen CJ start a full game this year. You brought up possibly finishing the season 7-9, 8-8, or possibly somewhere around there. Obviously, you do never know. He can come in and be Kurt Warner 2.0 at a left field, but obviously I'm not holding my breath for that one. But pretty much where my mind is at, and other 49ers faithful, I think, as well, it's like, well, you know, obviously we were all desperate and excited for this year and possibly making a little noise. So now that, obviously, with the loss of Jimmy, my mind kind of goes to, well, now at this point, I'm kind of in for a little low-key, you know, I guess you can call it a little low-key of a tank. And, you know, possibly that's why I brought up trading Pierre Garçon to kind of give everybody else experience as far as the younger wide receivers that we have, like Pettis, like Taylor, Bourne, possibly Richie James. Then I was just thinking, too, like, hey, screw it. Start Tavarius Moore instead of Jimmy Ward. Put in DJ Jones or Mitchell. You know, just kind of make some of those moves that maybe you lose a little production. But once again, it's like, do you want to go 8-8 and pick possibly, you know, in the 15 to 20 range? Or do you maybe want to low-key tank and then possibly end up having another top 10 pick and so forth to possibly get a premier edge rusher prospect? You know, that's kind of where my mind is at right now. Like,
well, exactly.
You know,
I'm not like.
Like, screw it. Let's hurt a little more this year. Like, screw it.
You know, I just hate to go in, especially week three, saying, you know, the word tank or whatever. But I get what you're saying. I mean, is 8-8 worth the 15th to 20th, let's just say 15 to 20 range, versus maybe going, you know, 5-11, 6-10, and getting the 5-10 range? You know, obviously,
and it's not just the first round. You got to remember, that's every round you're picking in that area.
Exactly,
you know, that's the
exactly.
difference of your guy or not your guy, and it's the difference of having to give up a lot of compensation to move up and not doing so.
Yeah, no. I totally agree with you.
Here's another fun question.
This is my thing. Is I'm all for it. Let's see Tre'Davious Moore over Jimmy Ward. Let's see DJ Jones. To me, trading Pierre Garçon makes sense because I think we're both in agreement he will not be here next year. He'll just
his contract is a little tricky. I ended up revisiting that one. His contract is a little tricky for that. So I can see him being here, and I can obviously easily see him not. And if I had a bet on him, I probably would say no. Once again, why do we draft Pettison? So he can sit on the bench again next year? I highly doubt that.
Yeah. And so, to me, you start accelerating that move. If Malcolm Smith – now, you wouldn't be able to get anything from Malcolm Smith, but I'm just using him for example. A lot of people don't see him here next year. So you're just accelerating that move. And you're essentially, I guess you say tank, I say roster evaluation. And if you tell me that we put in, let's just say we did the moves that we said right now, and, you know, we're surprised and these players can play and we get a couple extra, well, I mean, hey, you know, if Tre'Davious Moore comes in and he's just Deion Sanders 2.0, and he, you know, steals us 3 or 4 games, can we really complain about that? You know, obviously not. If it's just, to me, we really need to be honest, and we really need to see what we have going forward. And so that means we think, and that means we go 4-12 to be able to sit here and be able to honestly take a look at our roster and say, okay, who, like Robert Saleh likes to say, you know, the best 11. Well, what is exactly does that mean? You know, because it's obviously what it means, but what does it exactly mean? Because if that's our best 11 that showed up on the first half against Kansas City, we got some serious issues, bro. You know, that's a couple.
Hey, I mean, let's put things in perspective.
Need to find
that is,
out. Go ahead.
Arguably the best offense. Sorry. So that was arguably the best offense. It's not like we're getting creamed, you know, But, hey, look, I mean, look for example. Look at what the Buffalo Bills did to the damn Vikings yesterday. You know what I mean? Imagine if we got completely, you know, just burnt by the Chiefs all game. Imagine how that would have felt. You know what I mean? So
What makes me still positive is I saw a couple fire Robert Saleh. Maybe I'll give some people credit. I didn't see exactly when they were posted. Besides being posted yesterday, so they could have clearly been after halftime, which, you know, I wouldn't have exactly blamed Kyle Shanahan if he fired Robert Saleh at halftime yesterday either. Like, just pure emotion, you know. So,
right.
The one thing that makes me feel encouraged, and I have my blog, I believe, coming out today. It might have already came out for Nothing But Niners, the good, bad, ugly of yesterday's game. Spoiler alert, there's a lot of ugly. just a little spoiler alert. But one of the good that I had was, what encourages me is that, A, the leaders in the Kyle Shanahan and the leaders in that locker room haven't lost the team, because clearly they came out, you know, the second half and played better game and all that. And I would give Robert Saleh a feather in his cap to say that whatever adjustments, he definitely has the ability to make halftime adjustments. Because from going the 35 points the first half to only giving up 3 the second half, some of that is probably just pure by playing better, you know, more effort and pride. We weren't going to give up 35 points. You know, like, that wasn't going to happen. We weren't going to give up 70 points yesterday. That just really doesn't happen in pro football, period. But, I mean, the fact that they didn't score 14, you know, 17, that type of – the fact that we essentially really shut them down.
Yeah.
I think that Robert Saleh, he deserves I would give him a B to C grade. He deserves to get his ass chewed out for that first half and, you know, what the hell happened. And, you know, we need to never come out, you know, the first half of a game like that ever again. But to be able to make the adjustments in a short period of time that the NFL halftime is, I will give him props that I don't feel that – I felt that we were out-coached the first half, but not so much scheme-wise. I feel just more – I don't believe a lot of it was scheme. I think a lot of it was missed tackles. And I understand a lot of that comes down to a player. But after you can only blame a player so long before you have to point at coaching. You see what I'm saying?
For sure.
So I'll give Ruben a pass just because, you know, it was his first game back and all that type of stuff. But yesterday was definitely a step back. But I think that you are still seeing positive things. The concerning things is that offensively, you know, you see George Kittle, okay, you know, he's starting to become a very solid tight end. You know, you would possibly say, okay, George Kittle is a keeper. Kyle Juszczyk is obviously, you know, a keeper. I'm going to say stop. I'm not going to say, you know, get rid of him or trade him. But I'm a little stocked down on Trent Taylor. This isn't, you know, this is the second game in a row that if he had catches, it was very few. I don't remember. It wasn't like last year where you heard Trent Taylor's name. You knew Trent Taylor last year because you just heard his name so much that you couldn't not remember. I don't remember hearing his name called. If I did, it was.
You think
that
part
many.
Of that was just him just coming on and by surprise, just being a rookie and not having much tape on him? Do you think that's part of the reason why you're not really seeing, you know, you're not really seeing his name getting
that,
called too much this year?
I think it's a little bit of tape. When I saw him at the team hotel The day before, I asked him about his back, and he said he was all good, which I fully expected. I didn't expect him to come out and say, oh, no, it's killing me. I feel like I want to die. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I knew what he
can't cut the same way I used to.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's not going to come out and say anything like that. But I'm curious because what makes me disencouraged with Trent Taylor is that from what I heard on the radio, what I could see is that Detroit and Kansas City both played a lot of man-to-man. And what's making me disconcerned is that I'm not saying because of his size, I'm not saying because of, you know, whatever. But if you can't play, it's simply if you can't beat man-to-man coverage, you can't play in this year. A slot receiver is always one-on-one coverage. That's, you know, and so I think that I'm curious. I'm paying a little bit more attention to it. Now, Trent Taylor could come out and have four catches, you know, for 85 yards next week.
For sure.
You know, but I'm a little I don't know if you remember, but remember how we did our kind of season preview show before the start of the season? We kind of talked about how everybody's just assuming everybody will have the best career of their year this year.
Uh-huh.
And we both kind of just came up with the assumption that somebody's going to disappoint.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's going to – I think Trent Taylor's just going to be that player this year.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God we're
not, like, relying on him to be, like, the savior of the offense.
Oh,
you know,
cool.
It's not like Tom Sula or Kelly years where you're like, God, we need Trent Taylor to get 100 yards, you know. At the end of the day, I'm like,
yeah.
Once again, this is the most Debbie Downer you ever hear from me as far as me being and sounding like one. But, you know, I really don't care, to be fully honest with you, just for the simple fact that we have Pettis, Bourne, and Richie James kind of waiting in the wings. So, once again, I guess that's another note I want to hit. Like, maybe it's kind of time to experiment a little bit right now as well. Once again, kind of get some of the young guys playing a little bit. Like, if we were all in before this year started, then, like, next year is going to be, like, the grand all-in. Make sure no stone left unturned. Once again, maybe low-key tank, have another great draft, get that premier edge. You know what I mean? Like, saddle up and just everybody just needs to kind of be ready for next year. I'm not saying – I'm still going to watch every single game because I love watching development and everything that goes into it along those lines. But, you know, at the same time, maybe it's time to experiment a little bit. And, you know, first thing that kind of comes to mind as well, bring up Pita. Bring up Pita and see maybe he ends up giving you something by midseason or flashes by the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, get these guys looks that possibly can be part of the future.
I think that it's time to do some serious roster evaluation. I mean, they might wait for another week or two, you know. But, yeah, I think that's coming shortly. I think that, you know what, maybe in the grand scheme of life, this just happened for us to do exactly that. Because, to me, I think it's pretty clear that we weren't just a quarterback away last year. And
last year or this year?
Just this year in general, the last 2 years. You know, Jimmy G. Cool wasn't the answer to every problem. He was the answer to a good amount of them, and he'd been a Band-Aid for the rest of them. You know,
sure.
But I think stepping back and being able to see this is my goal, is that the goals of the season, you know, remain the same, win, you know, all that. But my goal is next year, do not have a prediction about a player. Have facts and stats and reasons to back it up. We should not step out of this year with any player that's currently out on the roster right now. We should not come out of this year without a good idea on who that player is going to be. This year, you know, this year and going
sure.
forward. That's step. If we are walking out of here saying, you know, come week 17 saying, well, you know, Trent Taylor, I mean, we don't really know. He could possibly – then this season was a failure. Because
– sure.
You know, and to really take a good, honest look on what we really need. I mean, you know, it's – you know, Akilah Witherspoon. I mean, I hate to harp on the man, and I know he has an ankle and everything like that, but – you know, and two down games, and, you know, I'm pretty sure there are plenty of players, you know, all-star players that have had two bad games.
Yeah.
But I think
I mean, you got to remember, he didn't start yesterday. He only went in because Sherman got injured.
Yeah, exactly.
To be fair. So, I mean, it's hard to be like, hey, somebody, you know, gives you their full effort, didn't even start the game because of injury, and then he goes in. I know exactly where you're coming from, so I'm not saying, oh, line up, TJ, you know, I'm not saying, you know, acting like he's my son, but, I mean, I always say you got to understand the circumstances, you know, because...
yeah, that's true. That is very true.
You got to look at things from all angles, too.
So, I mean, I think Akilah's going to be fine. I think that he is going to... I don't think he's the number one shutdown corner, but I don't think that he's...
I always just looked at him as a solid number two. That was my goal, and kind of still is.
And there's nothing wrong with a solid number two. Now, we're shortly quickly running out of time here, but have you heard anything? I know that it's a calf strain, it's multiple weeks, but have you heard anything about Sherman's, the extent of his calf strain?
Nothing in particular, really. Just like you said, though, looking at about like 3 weeks, wouldn't be surprised if he missed a month. That's another guy I would like. If I was going all in, kind of low key tank, I would try to save Richard Sherman's tires and tread for next year. But he also has all those damn, you know, bonuses for being active every week. So I don't think he'll obviously be down just to, you know, call the year a wash, you know, and save his tread for next year.
I think what you're talking about is still a couple weeks away. I think that's from a 1-6, 1-5, 1-6, 1-7, you know, 2-5 type of record.
Yeah,
you know,
I see that too. Last five games type of a thing.
I think the Battle of the Bay around that time is going to be the barometer of the season, and we're probably going to, you know, deeply evaluate ourselves and kind of where we're at. All right, Adam, as always, brother, thanks for coming on and hanging out with me today, bro.
Yeah, it was fun. Hey, stay strong out there, 49ers faithful, once again, and thanks to you for having me on today.
Yeah, no problem, bro. I'll go ahead and holler at you later, and
we'll
make it through this.
We'll be all right. I was about to say, what happens if we? What does it mean if we beat the Chargers? But we'll talk about that one soon.
Yeah, there you go. All right, brother.
All right, take care. All right, see you.
All right, everybody. Before we get out of here, I'd like to thank Adam for coming on. Before we get out of here, you know, go to patreon.com/NinerFaithfulRadio. Support the show. Go to cgiant.com, use the promo code NinerFaithfulRadio. And sporting event and concert ticket. I shall see y'all next week. Till then, peace, love, and happiness. Go Niners.